Our reading for today begins in Hebrews chapter 7, verse 1. Hebrews 7, verse 1. For this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him. And to him Abraham apportioned a tenth part of everything. He is first, by translation of his name, king of righteousness, and then he is also king of Salem, that is, king of peace. He is without father or mother or genealogy, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but resembling the Son of God, he continues a priest forever. See how great this man was to whom Abraham, the patriarch, gave a tenth of his spoils. And those descendants of Levi who received the priestly office have a commandment in the law to make tithes from the people, that is, from their brothers, though these also are descended from Abraham. But this man who does not have his descent from them received tithes from Abraham, and blessed him who had the promises. It is beyond dispute that the inferior is blessed by the superior. In the one case, tithes are received by mortal men, but in the other case, by one of whom it is testified that he lives. One might even say that Levi himself, who receives tithes, paid tithes through Abraham, for he was still in the loins of his ancestor when Melchizedek met him. Now, if perfection had been attainable through the Levitical priesthood, for under it the people received the law, what further need would there have been for another priest to arise after the order of Melchizedek, rather than one named after the order of Aaron? For when there is a change in the priesthood, there is necessarily a change in the laws as well. For the one of whom these things are spoken belonged to another tribe, from which no one has ever served at the altar. For it is evident that our Lord was descended from Judah, and in connection with that tribe, Moses said nothing about priests. This becomes even more evident when another priest arises in the likeness of Melchizedek, who has become a priest, not on the basis of a legal requirement concerning bodily descent, but by the power of an indestructible life. For it is witnessed of him, "You are a priest forever, after the order of Melchizedek." For on the one hand, a former commandment is set aside because of its weakness and uselessness, for the law made nothing perfect, but on the other hand, a better hope is introduced, through which we draw near to God. And it was not without an oath, for those who formerly became priests were made such without an oath, but this one was made a priest with an oath by the one who said it to him. The Lord has sworn and will not change his mind, you are a priest forever. This makes Jesus the guarantor of a better covenant. The former priests were many in number because they were prevented by death from continuing in office, but he holds his priesthood permanently because he continues forever. Consequently, he is able to save to the uttermost those who draw near to God through him, since he always lives to make intercession for them. For it was indeed fitting that we should have such a high priest, holy, innocent, unstained, separated from sinners, and exalted above the heavens. He has no need, like those high priests, to offer sacrifices daily, first for his own sins and then for those of the people, since he did this once for all when he offered up himself. For the law appoints men in their weakness as high priests, but the word of the oath, which came later than the law, appoints a son who has been made perfect forever. So we left off in chapter 6 with the statement, Jesus has gone as a forerunner on our behalf, having become a high priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Then for chapter 7, for this Melchizedek, who was king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings, and blessed him. You can go back to Genesis chapter 14 if you want to read everything that was going on there. But Abraham had given him a tenth part of all the spoils of that battle, I guess you would call it. It wasn't really a war, but he was going to rescue those that had been taken. And so in describing Melchizedek, he says the translation of his name, King of Righteousness, and then also King of Salem, that is, King of Peace, without father or mother or genealogy. In other words, we don't have anything recorded about him. In fact, Melchizedek is so obscure that you have this one mention of him, then you have the prophecies, and then you have Jesus after the order of Melchizedek, and that's all you've got. So we don't have any genealogies. We don't know anything about father or mother. We don't know anything about beginning or end. None of that is listed for us. So for Melchizedek, we've got Genesis 14, we've got Psalm 110, that's all out of the Old Testament. Then we got Hebrews chapter 5, 6, and chapter 7, And that's it. That's the entire account about Melchizedek from the Bible. That's all that's mentioned about him. So the explanations that are contained in the Hebrew letter are all the expounding upon Melchizedek that we have. So when he's saying we don't have these things, he's saying, you know what, we really don't know anything about him except, and then he begins to delineate those things. And so verse 4, he says, see how great this man was to whom Abraham the patriarch gave a tenth of the spoils. So they look at Abraham as that patriarch and put him up on that pedestal and says, all right, this is the way you look at Abraham. And look, Abraham paid tithes to Melchizedek, recognizing a place that Melchizedek had above him. And those descendants of Levi who had received the priestly office have a commandment in the law to take tithes of the people, you know, to serve in the temple and to support themselves. Their portion was God himself and their work in the temple. So they took tithes from them in order to work as priests for them, even though they were their brothers, and that they had also descended from Abraham. But this man, Melchizedek, who does not have his descent from them, he's not one of those brothers, he's not of the tribe of Levi, received tithes from Abraham, which was the patriarch of all those that would come after, and blessed him who had the promises. It is beyond dispute that the inferior is blessed by the superior. So he's establishing that Melchizedek had a higher position than Abraham. In the one case, tithes are received by mortal men, but in the other case, by one of whom it is testified that he lives. One might even say that Levi himself, who received tithes, paid tithes through Abraham, for he was still in the loins of his ancestor when Melchizedek met him. In other words, he wasn't even born yet. So then verse 11, now if perfection had been attainable through the Levitical priesthood, for under it the people received the law, what further need would there have been for another priest to arise after the order of Melchizedek rather than one named after the order of Aaron? So now we're back to the idea of, is the law of Moses, the Judaism, is it superior or inferior to what we have under Christ? Obviously you and I know that it's inferior, but the Hebrew writer has to establish that. So, verse 12, when there is a change in the priesthood, there is necessarily a change in the law as well. The law stated the priesthood could only be from the tribe of Levi, the descendants of Aaron. So here, he is saying, in order for there to be a different priesthood, there has to be a change in the law as well. For the one of whom these things are spoken belonged to another tribe. Jesus was not part of the tribe of Levi, from which no one has ever served at the altar, and it was never lawful for them to serve at the altar under the law of Moses. For it is evident that our Lord was descended from Judah, which were the kings. That's where David came from. And in connection with that tribe, Moses said nothing about priests. This becomes even more evident when another priest arises in the likeness of Melchizedek, who became a priest not on the basis of legal requirements concerning bodily descent, but by the power of an indestructible life. So he became a priest not because he was part of a lineage, but because of who he was. And then, verse 17, you're a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. For on the one hand, a former commandment is set aside because of its weakness and uselessness, for the law made nothing perfect. But on the other hand, a better hope is introduced through which we draw near to God. So that better hope comes through Jesus, who is our high priest, not after the order of Levitical priesthood from the law of Moses, but something greater, the order of Melchizedek, who is not tied to that law whatsoever. But again, we're still under that idea that if the priesthood changes, then the law had to change. So the law of Moses had to change or be done away with before you could have a different priesthood. And today, as Peter describes, we're priests of God ourselves. But our high priest is still Jesus, who was from that tribe of Judah. Verse 20, it is not without an oath, for those who formerly became priests were made such without an oath. But this one was made a priest with an oath by the one who said to him, the Lord has sworn and will not change his mind, you're a priest forever. This makes Jesus the guarantor of a better covenant. So there's our idea that Judaism was set aside in favor of something better. That is what we have under Christ. Now, these former priests were many in number because they were prevented by death from continuing in office. In other words, they died and somebody had to replace them. But he holds his priesthood permanently because he continues forever. Jesus does not die. He is God himself. Verse 25, consequently, he is able to save to the uttermost those who draw near to God through him, since he always lives to make intercession for them. There's two very important things to consider in that statement. First is that he does not die. Okay, he always lives. And the second is that he lives to make intercession. That is, to serve in that high priestly role. For it was indeed fitting that we should have such a high priest, who is holy, innocent, unstained, separated from sinners, and exalted above the heavens. Remember, he committed no sin. He did not deserve death whatsoever, but he accepted that death for us. And so he has no need, like those high priests, to offer sacrifices daily, first for his own sins and then for those of the people. First of all, he didn't sin, so he didn't need to make sacrifices for himself. And second of all, he did this once for all when he offered up himself. In other words, there's no need for a daily sacrifice for the people because his sacrifice was so much greater that there's no need for continual sacrifices. For the law appoints men in their weakness as high priests, but the word of the oath, which came later than the law, appoints a son who has been made perfect forever. Without that weakness, by the way. So that concludes chapter 7. Please come back again for another reading from chapter 8. And please continue in prayer that God may be with us all.